This is the Wisconsin Lighting Lab Willcast. My name is Adam Rupp, and my guest today is Joe with a company called Synapse. Synapse is a smart lighting controls company, an industrial IoT company. Joe, let's start out. Just give me a few background details on Synapse and your involvement in the controls business.
Sure. So Synapse is a Huntsville, Alabama-based company, founded in 1997. Consulting firm, basically, that took a Zigbee application. Took them 6 months to figure out how to turn a light off and on. So so from there, they decided there's got to be a better mousetrap.
Yep.
And they wrote some application software that sits on top of the Zigbee stack. So the things that are the good pieces of Zigbee that for mesh technology were brought out. And we supplied the kind of the buttons and the hooks to make the network easy. So when you power the device on, It's a native mesh network where the nodes are talking to each other based on signal strength.
So it's not necessarily a competitor to Zigbee. It's working in conjunction with the Zigbee technology.
Right, really. Our IP is the software that currently sits on a Zigbee stack, but could be ported to any type of other standard like Thread or LoRa. So for us, the use cases with Zigbee are great because it gives us enough data bandwidth, enough distance, and the speeds are significant enough that we can do more than just lighting applications.
So why mesh technology? So what, I guess, what's mesh technology 101, and what are the competing kind of communications options?
And mesh, native mesh to us for our Snap OS is something that we do. But you can do a star network. You can do other network configurations with Zigbee. For us, mesh, especially in large scale deployments, where you want to save power. A lot of our applications are battery powered. You don't want the nodes transmitting great distances all the time. So the mesh gives you the opportunity to talk node to node, point to point, light to light.
So there's really
a lot of traffic through the network.
There's no bottleneck in the communications network. So if you had, for instance, say a baseball stadium and there were 400 fixtures around more or less a circle, every single fixture would be able to relay the communication.
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
Cool.
Each device has its own microprocessor, its own smarts, and it can pick its own route based on signal strength. So that's why we're kind of fond of mesh. And for lighting, of course, it's a natural, because most of your fixtures are on the same plane or in the same area, and you can push out software very easily through the mesh.
So what are the competing standards with Zigbee? I know in the lighting industry, there's been a lot of debate the last decade or so. You know, what is going to be the standard that people can build their controls platforms off of? Beyond Zigbee, what are the options?
Yeah, so you have Bluetooth, of course, Bluetooth, BLE, Wi-Fi. Thread was a standard as well, which and some LoRa-based applications, which are all, they're all standards that you can write to.
Mm-hmm.
Where everybody gets nervous is, well, we're talking wireless, so what else is out there that's running on those standards in my facility? And then also, get into security questions as well. For us, we picked Zigbee. That's the thing we started with. We have a lot of applications that are non-lighting, non-industrial, where we sell that, our radio device with our software loaded, and customers can write their own applications to it. So it's been battle-tested. There's limitations with Zigbee. You can't push video over it, which you get a lot of people in lighting, street controllers that want video, of course. But for controls and device management, there's enough bandwidth on that, on Zigbee, that it's been a popular choice for us.
Cool.
Yeah.
So within the application space, I know you guys advertise your industrial IoT capabilities and then smart lighting, but it sounds like there are other legs to that product stool. There could be agricultural products. What is kind of the full range of the applications you guys work on?
Yeah, for Synapse in general, we have basically three vertical markets. One we started with, which is what we call, and what I'm responsible for, is our core IoT development platform, where we basically sell our Snap OS, which is our IP, to developers and inventors that want to integrate and make sensors smart or any type of device smart. We've sold to people who have made tags for people that are moving throughout a hospital to make sure they're washing their hands when they're entering a room and out. Our largest application is smart agriculture, where they're monitoring for pests in hard fruit orchards, nut orchards, and fruit orchards. And that once you have that data highway, that, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands of acres, now you can produce, you can bring back other information and basically put a weather station in every acre that you need. So you go from monitoring to now controlling, so you can turn pumps on and, you know, frost warning, you get advanced frost warnings and turn irrigation pumps on and shut things down if you have some issue in the field, or a pest, which was the original application, was to have a pesticide-free pest control. And you can, you know, obviously spray in the fields, and, you know, it's really interesting applications.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we also have guys that are doing motor monitoring, both new motors and then also retrofits in the market. So the applications are really endless.
I like the data highway term.
Yes.
So in reality, you guys are the data highway in between the sensors and the machines and whatever is being outputted.
Correct.
And from a building management software or computerized control of everything.
Right.
So do you guys do application development kind of downstream of the wireless standard and the sensors? Or I know you have an online interface that we've worked with, but do you get into the software side of it at all?
For our lighting and our industrial IoT verticals, we do.
Okay.
So lighting, as you know, we have our original Simply Snap software was built to be a on-prem standalone system because of, you know, concerns with internet security, with being devices plugged into the internet. But we do have a cloud platform version of that too, which ties into our industrial IoT, where we're trying to use that super highway of lighting controls. You know, we have thousands of lights inside of a warehouse, and we want to get information from devices on the floor, motors, pumps. You could do sub-metering, and then backhaul that data. So where the software comes in at the back end is, you can't do everything on a gateway. You have to be connected to the cloud in order to do the real analytics and bring value to the data that you're pulling in. So that's where we do a lot of cloud software work.
Cool.
Yeah.
And in industrial IoT specific, it seemed like a lot of the stuff is around production inventory management. Is that, do you guys use computer vision for inventory monitoring, or what does that sensor suite look like?
So a lot of the sensors are temperature, pressure, weight, vibration.
Okay.
So it's taking basic sensors that are off the shelf sensors and making them smart, just by adding a battery powered node and tying, you know, 4 to 20 milliamp output to our system and bring it back, hauling it just like we would interface to a lighting driver. And then that data can be pulled every 15 minutes, or it can be event driven. If there is an issue, you can get, you know, an email alert, a text alert, or the system can automatically override it and turn something off.
And what's the ultimate goal of the building manager, the facility manager? Is it controlling inventory levels? But what's the end result of all this? Is it production throughput?
That's a great question.
I guess the sky's the limit.
We're still trying to figure that out. You know, what's the data worth, and you know, who's willing to pay for the data? But
yeah.
So, you know, I can speak for our parent company, which is industrial pipe manufacturing, and, you know, makes everything into municipal water supply, basically. So their concerns are, you know, inventory waste, high carrying costs of powders that are used in fire extinguishers, airflow loss, that's a big one. So extra compressors that they have to pay for. Inventory management, you know, we have weights on carts for material that's going through a process. All that adds up to extra inventory costs. You know, some of it might just be asset tracking. You know, where's a fork truck we've been renting for 2 years? Now the lease is up and we can't even find it. So it's the sky's the limit, really. Yeah.
I was on a vendor visit trip recently, and it's a huge manufacturing company, you know, hundreds and thousands of acres of, and they actually manage a lot of their inventory outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to come up with some type of a system to track inventory. Because in some cases, you'd have to go, what's the equivalent of 20 city blocks to get to the inventory?
Right.
And, you know, they couldn't find it. So they would actually produce, it'd be easier to produce new product than it would be to find the inventory. So I can certainly see the benefits of those types of capabilities.
Yes, we actually, speaking of the core product, we have a guy that actually developed his own asset tracking system with our Snap products. So, and that was the reason he was at a very large manufacturing facility, and the story about missing the fork truck that was leased for 2 years. That's a real story.
Yeah.
So it really depends on what they're looking for. A lot of it is just, with the incentives from the utility companies, is just power monitoring and getting reporting so that you can get energy rebates and then smart use of your energy, of course.
So in the fork truck situation, was it a GPS tracker of some kind, or was there is it more or less just something that connect with your data highway exactly where it was on the facility?
Exactly. Okay. So he wrote his own application software and his own user interface based on the equipment. You barcode scan that fork truck. And that tells you all your OSHA security things as well as the guy have clearance to run it. And then, basically he set up repeater pings throughout the facility, which is one of the largest facilities undercover and under one roof next to the Pentagon. And it's, his accuracy was within 6 feet based on signal strength. So
that's wild.
That's really good. Yeah.
And then on the compressed air side, would that be like a pressure sensor that then connects to your data highway?
It's an actual airflow sensor.
Airflow sensor.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically the plant would put those in throughout their process and check for air leaks using those airflow sensors, having a baseline of knowing what the pressure should be at those areas, and they could detect leaks and get those fixed. Hmm. Yeah.
So you said you can't send video data through your network. We're in the early stages of looking into using some computer vision for data analytics on various applications. And, the basic idea is you get a camera, 10, 20, 30, 50 feet in the air on a light pole. You can do a lot of stuff with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so what type of network is it? You said it's a frequency bandwidth issue, but what type of technology would be required in that case?
For video, you would definitely want power over Ethernet with Wi-Fi, or, Wi-Fi could certainly handle that video requirement. And for that, we have customers that integrate lighting controls. They have their own system that are doing video and sound and architectural lighting for basically city streetscape lighting. And they have all that technology. And what they'll do is they'll use their technology, four or five different RF devices on those poles. And then in the surrounding areas, they'll use our network and then tie the two together via API, so the customer only sees one interface. So they use the lower cost control function for the I wouldn't call them dumb poles, but the ones that aren't lighting up the city street, and which might be a couple hundred poles, and then there may be 1,000 poles around the area that still want controls and data management from, and then we'll use our network and tie them together into one dashboard. So it's possible.
And on the lighting topic, which is our business,
right?
Sports lighting, and I know you guys do a lot of sports lighting controls. What are end users trying to accomplish with sports lighting? I know it's one of those situations where the sky is the limit in terms of what can be done, but if you had to kind of 80-20 it and narrow it down to the things that provide the most value for the best cost architecture,
right,
what do you think people are after?
Well, I mean, it really depends on the end user and the application. Obviously, the small municipalities care about not having power on when it shouldn't be on, or having a guy there, or having coaches and players with access to the lighting controls all the time. So for them, it might, for city parks department, it may be we want to be able to set schedules, turn lights on and off remotely, so we don't have to send a guy out every time someone wants to use the field. We want to have practice settings. We want to have game time settings. So there's a lot of that in the municipalities. When you get up into the larger scale Division I and pros, then it's more flash. They want to see more
light shows.
And so there's it really depends on the application. Our system, we try to tend to make it flexible enough to handle both. We have a very simple user interface so that, and you could set different management administration levels on it, so you can have the coach be the user and, the city plant manager or city manager being the administrator in it. So But I would say most of the time it's mainly schedules.
It's switching and, yes. and schedules.
Yeah, definitely.
And we kind of see the same thing. And you know, we've got some larger scale applications where they want the, you know, want the fancy light shows. But like you said, a lot of it comes down to, if you're going to be paying and investing in a solution that limits energy, let's make sure it's not turned on.
That's the main
more
thing.
Than it needs
right,
to.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So you mentioned power monitoring, and this is something that we're taking a close look at right now. You know, solid state electronics are more susceptible to power issues than some of the legacy lighting technologies.
Right.
And when you say power monitoring, is it energy usage, or are you guys actually looking at voltage transients and other types of, you know, dirty power issues?
Yeah, for us, it's more energy usage. Yeah,
okay.
Reporting for, you know, to meet DLC specifications or Title 24. You know, DLC 5.0 is coming out next year, and I think power monitoring will probably be a requirement the way it looks. So it's, for us, it's just energy reporting.
Okay.
Yeah.
And on the support side, I know you guys have commissioning services. Mm-hmm. You have ongoing, do you have service contracts or service models, or what does that sales process typically look
sure.
like for a sports lighting application?
Yeah, honestly, it really depends on the lighting OEM.
Yep.
They have their choice. Some people just want to sell lights and not be a controls company.
Sure.
So they, you know, call Synapse
want,
with all your,
I'll
yeah, call
all
your
that, yeah.
Synapse for all your
they
issues.
Give them your cell phone number,
yeah,
right?
So that's exactly. So some people actually want to run it as part of their value-added services,
yep.
and that's certainly an option. We have a remote access where we host the cloud, where you know, for an annual contract fee, you could have up to 50 of your sites being monitored, and then you can parse those off individually as you see fit. We can do it that way, or we certainly, if you know, you just hand us over the end user and give them our 800 number, they can contract that service with us, or they can run it behind their own VPN and run it on their own network.
So when issues or, you know, when troubleshooting situations come up, what are oftentimes the reasons behind it? Is it is it an educational component where the, you know, the end user was potentially sold a really cool product and they weren't educated on it, or what do you guys see come up as the main pain points?
You know, a lot of it stems from, you know, who's installing it,
yep.
who is putting the map together, who's getting the floor plan together. You know, we have a thing called a census that goes out and, you know, finds all the radios that are in that area for that application and pulls them onto the map. But if nobody's really laid out the map with a proper, you know, map, MAC IDs, or where are these things located, then it becomes kind of hard to build out that map. It's easy to control, but the end user typically wants to know where, you know, make sure the lights are in the location that you say you are on the map, and then you can set schedules and zones based on that. So after initial startup, we really don't see a lot of issues other mm-hmm. than a guy forgot his login password, or, you know.
The help desk.
Oh, the help desk call, yeah, so.
Yeah, I know, it's interesting. We work with a lot of contractors, you know, electrical professionals, and, you know, I think there's a bit of a lag in knowledge and training where, you know, your traditional journeyman or contractor, they're very, very good at, you know, traditional products with the, you know, you're hooking up, you know, basic products into their electrical systems, do a
right.
phenomenal job at that. But it's almost like there needs to be a separate skill set where it's Joe the contractor meets Geek Squad.
Exactly.
And, you know, I've always wondered with, you know, larger industrial facilities, you know, do you guys work with their IT department more so than their building and maintenance department?
You have to.
I tell
the story all the time. I've walked into projects to go in and commission them, and the IT guy had no idea this was even going on and that there was going to be another network running on, and everything just comes to a screeching halt. So you have to
yeah.
make sure you keep those guys involved from the front end.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then to your point to contractors and electrical, the other biggest thing we see is missing antennas or antennas mounted to, you know, in the wrong spot or not, you know, not connected. So those little things that we need to do a better job educating before things get into the, you know, installed in the field and we go out for commissioning. Those are
yep.
usually a little bit of hiccups, but yeah, IT is a critical one. They can stop the presses real quick.
Yeah. And in the IT world, a lot of this is, I don't want to say it's old news, but it's already part of that skill set.
Right.
So that's,
right.
you know, I think, a fusion of both of those skill sets are needed. And from a compliance standpoint or a national electrical code standpoint, who are the folks that have to install these products? Do they have to be a licensed electrical contractor, or can the IT department in the long run manage this silo?
Typically, it's going to be a licensed electrician, yep. either a plant electrician, or you know, if you're selling through the energy services market, usually they have local electricians that are doing the install. From a commissioning standpoint, certainly it can be the IT guy.
Okay.
But from the physical installation, yeah, it's typically an electrician.
Okay. Yep. So the future of IoT, the IoT, AI, computer vision, there's such, 5G, these are all, there's a lot of buzzwords involved here.
Yes.
And every time I read about things or I watch YouTube videos on, how this big IoT wave is coming, then I say, well, on the commercial industrial side, this stuff's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
You look at automated manufacturing, robotics, things that you guys are doing. It's interesting how there's a disconnect between, the past and the future. And I'm sure on the industrial side, things will continue to get better. But do you just see it as there's a lag in the retail space or the residential space with the technologies you guys are already deploying? Or is it indeed a new technology on the kind of the retail end market side of things? Could be built, home building, everything from digital thermostats to, I read about refrigerators that can, more or less send you a notification that you need to replenish your tomatoes.
But right.
Is it the same stuff in a new application, or are there new standards and technologies being developed?
Yeah, that's a great point.
And I'm sure it's a combination of both.
I would say the home consumer market is way ahead of, the industrial.
Is it really?
Oh, for sure. You think about it. Your phone, has how many different radios, and you can connect to anything from anywhere really already with it. So the home thermostats, the Philips Hue lighting, the multicolored lighting controls, the Ring, the doorbell guys that can alert, So that space is already using IoT.
Mm-hmm.
But, think about who it's, there's data, and data, the big guys love data,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
The Googles, the Amazons, the Microsofts, they all love data. So, they can push that in, right? Where when you flip that over to, the industrial commercial space too, then you start, somebody's got to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got to understand it. Somebody's got to maintain it. It's still in its infancy. I think from the industrial standpoint, your point of AI is one of our, our CEO's vision is mm-hmm. that all this machine learning, the artificial intelligence machine learning with this data that we are trying to help pull in to the cloud, that is the real future. That's the real end game. And it's really going to transform manufacturing. We talk about Industry 4.0. I'm not a big buzzword guy, but you talk about Industry 4.0 and, all these things when you go to an IoT show and everybody's talking about them. We're trying to go from the node to the gateway to the cloud to fit. Those are the three big pieces that you have to get the data to, you have to get the data somewhere, and then you get it to the cloud, and that's where all the analytics and the real power come.
And getting it to the cloud is the data highway that you guys have created.
That's we're just one flavor of it, but that's the other issue too, is trying to educate. Is there's no standard in gathering that data, so that's the hard part right now, is people are like, all right, we get it, what do we do with it? Is that the right mousetrap for us? So it's a definite education process, but that's if you believe everything you read, that, or at least a fraction of it.
You're not supposed to?
If you believe a small fraction of what you read, it's still in its infancy.
Yeah.
It still will transform the way manufacturing is done.
And when I said that, when I said it, it seems like it's been around for longer on the industrial side. I think, what I was referring to is at the machine level.
Yeah,
so you look at, whether it's using optics to track, throughput, or, if it's other types of automated manufacturing, that stuff's been around for a long time. I think potentially the difference is it's not connected. So it's at a local machine level, but the data isn't being accumulated in a way that can be understood and potentially made sense of.
Right. Yeah. We came out with the term illuminating dark data, I think was a marketing buzz of ours a few years ago. And we were talking about lighting as the superhighway of data. But if you think about the dark data on a factory floor, or even in a sports facility, what are you missing that isn't connected to a PLC or a robotic system or your BACnet system? there are pieces of equipment that aren't being monitored, mm-hmm. and it's expensive to try to get those connected and hardwired to your PLC backhaul. So the idea is to just have these plug and play, off the shelf sensors that become smart and become part of that information system. And you take that data. I joke about all the cell phone photos that are taken now, all that data. You use the ones that are good, but back in my day, you had to care about, what you were getting developed. And now you just take a 10,000 pictures and see what works. It's similar with data. You're bringing all this data back. You're taking those analytics and you're applying what you've learned from those analytics and changing your production.
So you have customers or markets that are, they're grabbing the data, they're storing it for future use. So, or is it just a case where the sensor infrastructure is there, the data highway is there? From there, you need some type of server, either on-site or off-site. Right. So do you have people that are collecting it, knowing that down the road, they're going to be able to make sense of it?
Yeah, they're collecting maybe it. Maybe not they're as many as you'd like. They're using it, right. I mean, you're using it immediately. But I think we've had a few proof of concepts that are some of our McWane factories where they've learned things that they didn't even know were happening. So they've made immediate changes. But then certainly they can store those, store the data over time and year over year take a look at, this piece of operation versus this piece of operation and make executive changes to the way they're operating those areas of the plant.
Cool. Yeah. Well, anything else you'd want to touch on?
No. I appreciate the time. Man. Yeah, it's a very exciting time. I think we're still in the infancy of it. And, we'll see what the next three to five years bring.
It's all about making dumb lighting products into smart computers, right?
Exactly. Yeah. All right, everything will be a computer.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Appreciate it.
Yep.